This is the Gear Patrol Podcast. In this episode, our style editor John Zintek and deputy editor Jack Seamer join me to discuss streetwear, art, and how LA streetwear brand Braindead utilizes collaborations to give back to the wider community. John spoke with the founder of Braindead, Kyle Ng, for issue 16 of Gear Patrol magazine, and he discusses streetwear culture in general, but also why Braindead is so unique among its peers. Also, you may notice a few short audio hiccups in this episode. Sorry about that. I'm Nick Caruso, and I'm glad you're here. Let's get started. So our chat today needs just a shade of context to get started. I want to make sure that folks understand your relationships to the story we're going to be talking about, just to put everything into perspective. So, Jack, you are our deputy editor at Gear Patrol, meaning you oversee the editorial direction on the website and in the print magazine. And John, you conducted you're an editor at Gear Patrol, and you conducted an interview with a man named Kyle Ng and authored a story about it in the latest issue of Gear Patrol magazine. So that's the crux of today's story. Jack, you've had a hand in it. John, you made it. So John, why don't you start us off? Can you tell us who is Kyle Ng and what is Braindead, just kind of generally?
Yeah, so Kyle Ng is a designer, clothing designer, who lives in Los Angeles. And he co-founded a brand named Braindead with a guy named Ed Davis. And the two of them have really kind of shaped what streetwear and collab culture and really modern menswear for that reason is in the last half decade. Kyle's kind of a fascinating guy, and we can get into that a little later, but he's a West Coaster, born and bred, grew up actually in Berkeley, and then moved to LA for school. So he's repping the better one of the coasts.
If you insist. And then, so Braindead is the brand they founded together, and it is, they do much more than just streetwear.
Yeah. So if you're going to any online retailer, you're looking for things, this isn't tailored clothing business where it would fall under the, what's known as like the streetwear category. But, you know, as you said, their collaborations range from clothing and shoes and sneakers, which are much hyped and quickly sold out, to tables, pasta, coffee, homewares, grooming products. But, you know, they would be called a streetwear brand, yes.
And they also run a cinema too, right?
This is so cool. So, you know, everything's shutting down during the pandemic, right?
Yes.
Braindead opens up an independent cinema over on Fairfax in Los Angeles. Goal of this is to kind of show Indian art house films, create weird merch around it, one of a kind stuff, sell it. That stuff can kind of, as everything else was closing, Kyle and his team were opening basically what is the first of hopefully numerous concepts around this indie theater, clothing hybrid shop. They sell food as well there. And the food is just as cool and sought after as the clothing.
What you pursued with this interview and the story is the philosophy, specifically Kyle's philosophy behind collaborations. That's what we're talking about, everybody, when we say collabs. We're talking about collaborations between Braindead and generally other brands. John, how do we define streetwear? It's sort of a nebulous entity, I think, for a lot of people who aren't steeped in the culture already.
Yeah, so streetwear is a term that's very, as you said, it's a loose term to describe a type of casual clothing. But it's a little more complicated than that. The term streetwear pulls off of, you know, it's the opposite, the antithesis of office wear or business wear, right? So it's what you would not wear to an office to when there were dress codes back when that was a thing.
And offices, yeah.
And offices. When there were dress codes, what were the things that would be against that? You'd take sneakers, jeans, sweatshirts, hoodies, t-shirts, things in that category. But, you know, a lot of that was then also associated with, you know, coming from the street, which then started to draw upon Black culture a lot. So the root of streetwear really does come out of Black culture and what was happening in cities in the, you know, 80s, 90s. But the term streetwear is also a little controversial. Mm-hmm. The designer Virgil Abloh has called it out essentially as just being a loose term to define, you know, Black culture or clothing, right, around that. Just as Tyler, the Creator, did with the Grammys urban category for, you know, rap, hip hop, R&B music. It is a wide ranging category, which now defines kind of casual clothing, graphic inspired. One of the big things about streetwear is there's a large following from young people. There mm-hmm. are limited edition drops. There are new releases. These things sell out very quickly. There's a lot of excitement around it. It plays into pop culture a lot as well. Just as there's kind of the hype of, you know, the celebrity and things like that, these products are elevated to almost that same level.
Thanks, John. Yeah, that's a nice deep dive, brief deep dive. Jack, how do you deem John's description there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't follow streetwear, you know, nearly as much as John. You know, I think that, you know, in our Slack channels, we kind of get, you know, a bird's eye view of things that are kind of happening out there. One of the things that just always kind of takes me with streetwear is just the pace of it. You know, it just feels very, very quick. You know, I think compared to like other traditional, you know, sort of seasonal fashion drops. I don't know how you feel about it, John. I mean, it just seems like with Instagram culture, with you know, just the internet, like things are just happening all the time, right? Like there's like every day there's like a new moment.
Yeah, there's a ton of energy, right? It sort of does play off that zeitgeisty outside the mainstream, but just like never stops. It's a current there. John?
Yeah. So, I mean, streetwear is, it's the antithesis of traditional fashion models, right? So traditional fashion, you had releases for fall, winter, spring, summer. There'd be runway shows if it were bigger brands. That's, you know, expanded into kind of holiday and resort collections as well. But there are very like codified seasons for new collections and whatnot. But streetwear is, you know, it's young, it's punk, it's, you know, not trying to conform to those things. So instead of dropping whole collections, it's single releases. Instead of doing it in planned drops for calendars, it's whenever they would like to do it. Sometimes you hear about these things overnight. And this is how brands like Supreme became so popular. How would they get lines going through Soho to buy their products out is because there became a culture of kind of waiting for the next release. It was like this big dopamine hit when a new single product would come out or group of products and people would snap them up and they'd be gone. And that would be it.
Right.
You'd have to wait for the next one.
It sort of makes this, sort of doubles back on itself and makes its own culture, even as it's responding to culture. Because if you're waiting for that next drop, you are part of a community who's also doing that. And I've always thought that kind of liveliness and attention is really impressive and kind of unique to this category.
Yeah, I mean, people familiar with the category will talk about drop culture, which speaks to that engagement. And, mm-hmm. you know, people who are a part of this community, who relate to the brand, who are you know, you wouldn't say fanatical, but, you know, the brand is part of who they associate themselves with. It's part of their identity, which is, you know, something that these big fashion brands have kind of lost in recent years is the means to connect with people on that much deeper level.
Right. You, when you were saying that they drop stuff whenever they want, I was thinking there's no way they could have like a catalog. And a catalog, like the catalogs that brands still insist on sending to my house that are, you know, in my entryway. And it's like there could almost not be a more removed way to communicate your brand than some crappy, you know, throwaway pamphlet that they just toss on the floor inside our mailroom.
You know, it's archaic, and some people now have a nostalgia for that, but that's what it is. It's a thing of the past. So now it's Instagram, it's TikTok, it's all done on your phone, and it's all done really fast.
What you focused on, John, with this interview with Kyle is his relationship with and his philosophy about collaborations within that category.
Correct.
Yeah. And so we cover collaborations all the time. Watches, even cars, tech. Can you both check me on this definition? I mean, generally in the fashion world, at least, collaborations are when a brand or a design house or someone kind of notable for their aesthetic works with another brand, one who is often very established, to design and produce like special edition clothing, so to speak. Is that fair?
I mean, yes and no. There's the term collaboration is, you know, it's two entities coming together, right? So in the fashion world, that's two brands. That's a designer, two designers. That could be a brand and a celebrity. And then the range of products that fit within this collaboration mold, you know, has really taken on new meaning in recent years or new depth of range, I guess. There's on the kind of deepest dive that you just alluded to, that's a whole new product where teams come together and they find the best of both brands and solve a new problem and create a new product that is, you know, additive to the market. On the very surface level of a collaboration, it's slapping a logo on a product or changing a color scheme to something,
right,
which you'll see in many other areas of the product world. And this is something where you'll see retailers in fashion doing it a lot more. The thing that's so hyped right now in retail are exclusives. And these are, they're, you know, a special term for a collab that's essentially just a different colorway.
Right.
So you can go to, you know, the Mr. Porter's, Essence, and Huckberry, et cetera. And you'll see these things that are deemed collaborations, and they're not new products. It's just a colorway that you can, you know, only shop at that retailer. Is it solving a new problem? No. Is it a little different than what other people have? Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So that raises a really interesting question that I have for you, Jack. From a sort of like an editorial curation standpoint, when would a collaboration be newsworthy? What is there a threshold? Is there something that signifies that this is finally, you know, worth covering?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think that there's like a standard. You know, I think that every collaboration tries to be unique, right? And like, you know, I think. You know, it's as much as we want to sort of bucket collaborations, you know, we should really evaluate them relative to what they're trying to achieve and what they're doing. One of the things that's always just really difficult, I think, not just as an editor, but just a consumer, is the transparency into like what went into that collaboration, right? Like we were just talking about some collaborations that maybe were more shallow than others. Others feel very hands-on, where like, you know, you have a designer coming into a fashion brand, even something like Uniqlo, right, that does a lot of collaborations, and you can tell kind of that there's there was a heavy hand there, you know, from the guest, I guess, that kind of came in. So, you know, I think there's like a lot of variables that go into making something newsworthy or notable. You know, I think if as an editor, your first responsibility is to ask, like, is this going to be of interest and to the reader, or, you know, to our reader, you know, and the brands involved probably will do most of the answering. But obviously if the collaboration itself is like a, has goals around just beyond just making profit, right, which I think is something that is relevant to this story here, you know, and brain dead, is that a lot of the collaborations don't come about for the, or aren't, you know, primarily motivated by pure profit.
So Jack, you alluded to this, there's sort of like a deeper meaning behind some collabs. Like we've said, a lot of streetwear is hype beasts hunting for the latest drop, but a lot of it does seem to be sort of universally connected to a deeper philosophy and maybe a deeper awareness. So John, the subhead for your story is how Braindead's Kyle Ng has embraced the collaboration as a means to build community. And inside the piece, you talk about him using collaborations for positive change. Can you kind of explain Kyle's collab philosophy?
Yeah, I think that to understand the way Kyle started to approach what he's done with Braindead, you just have to kind of look at what he did before Braindead. He went from Berkeley, where he grew up, went to high school, you know, attended punk shows. His dad liked mountain climbing, stuff like that, rock climbing. But when he went to school, he went to LA for film school. And he realized that, you know, film and much of art is a collaboration. This kind of myth of the artist or the designer as, like, you know, getting the word of God spoken to them and they create, you know, a beautiful design or a film or a piece of music or something like that is such a myth that we've created in society, where we like to place these people on pedestals, and that really kind of these creative works that are out there are really the work of many people coming together. So when he started Braindead, it really started as this collaboration, not just with him and Ed, you know, co-founders of this company, but, you know, he was working at Urban Outfitters before he started Braindead, working, kind of pulling together collaborations for Urban Outfitters, bringing people in that could do different things. And as he started Braindead, he reached out to those people again and had them create designs for him, for some of Braindead's first shirts. You know, his first experience launching the brand was at Nepenthes in New York in the garment district. He created a range of custom skateboards for this cool Japanese New York based brand. Within the first few months, this company, and so the company itself, Braindead, is built on this foundation of collaboration. And so as the company's grown through the years, Kyle's really started to hone in on what these products can do and what they should do. And he's gotten to a point where, you know, he believes that, you know, these collabs can give back, and giving back being a very wide term. They can give back in terms of profits that they generate. They can give back in terms of supporting culture. And they can, you know, also then support other artists, designers, brands, communities, those types of things, raising awareness and just bringing them into the greater Braindead community and space that has been generated from this, like, hype around the brand.
It's such an impressive, admirable model, business model. This is a good opportunity to take a quick ad break. But when we come back, let's really drill down into Kyle's specific philosophy about how he conducts Braindead and his approach to collaborations. There's a quote in here that I loved. It says, "Collaboration in commerce and ethics all work hand in hand because it's all about community and about creating relationships and putting this mycelium network together of knowledge and ideas and people. That to me is just a really beautiful way to describe what you were just describing as art, right? He's making art with these collaborations. Jack, when John pitched this to you, what did you think? Like, what made you say yes to this story?
There are a couple of things that just like stood out immediately. You know, I think one of the things that we really try to do in print as much as possible is bridge kind of the various beats and verticals that we cover at Gear Patrol, right? Like we cover a lot of things. You cover watches, we cover outdoor products, we cover cars, bourbon, etc. You know, and I think that if you can find stories that like bridge those things, you know, you're going to create like a memorable moment for the reader. You know, and I think that the Gear Patrol magazine reader is kind of unique, compared to a lot of the readers that we have online, you know, because they're discovering the content in a completely different way. I think that was one thing that really stuck out, you know, as John has sort of alluded to, like Braindead isn't really a style brand, right? Like they're, you know, they maybe come from that background and it can be kind of categorized as a streetwear or style brand, but you know, they're doing rock climbing collections, they're making home products, kind of putting unique decals on Nalgene bottles. I've been trying to buy a Braindead Nalgene bottle for a year, and I always miss out on them.
John, you should have hooked him up when you're talking to Kyle.
I don't have the hookup, dude. I've been trying to get it for years too.
You know, so I think that was the thing that was like a really immediately attractive about the story is that it touched on a lot of what you know we do holistically as a editorial company. I think it bridged that gap a lot. You know, I think, you know, we've talked about some things already that I think also, made the story, pretty attractive. And I think it's that sort of that, I don't think Braindead's an abrasive brand, but I think streetwear, you know, can be antithetical to sort of mainstream status quo. You know, and I think that, like as a brand that prioritizes collaborations, like they're adding to the culture, right? Like they're very additive and creating sort of this venue for a consumer to buy things, you know, that isn't just like transactional, right? Like there's a sense of discovery there where like you're buying a product and you're learning about something. And I think that was something that really stood out about the story as well.
The other element I think that's also something Gear Patrol has been exploring more and more is the effect of brands on society and how they fit in, whether that's economically or culturally, who they're supporting, why they're supporting, how. And I wanted to refer to a few of specific collaborations that, John, you highlighted in the story, that really outline what Braindead can do. The first is a t-shirt from last year, June 2020. It was a collaboration with a musician, Dev Hines, and raised about $500,000 for the Movement for Black Lives and the LGBTQ Freedom Fund. He worked with climber Ashima Shiraishi on a shoe and supported organizations working to get marginalized people climbing. And then also, like you alluded to earlier, you said pasta, but also made vegan burgers with LA Burger Lords, and proceeds went to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund and Stop AAPI Hate. So the activism aspect has to be just one of the biggest drivers behind how these collaborations come together for Braindead. But is that true? I mean, is that kind of how he seeks out partners?
So I think that what you're getting at really kind of touches on this really interesting philosophy that Kyle's approaching. you know, here in the US, people consume. You know, we're in a capitalist society, the world, Western world, whole world. We're all about consuming, whether it's Netflix, whether it's food, whether it's clothing, whether it's, you know, the media on our phones, this podcast, we are always consuming. And the people get very cynical about that consumption when you start to think about it and resources it uses and how it's this constant cycle of buying and something new and something new and something new.
Yeah.
But instead of getting too cynical about that late stage capitalism, Kyle has found a way to use the kind of necessity people have for consuming to give back, to build, to do new things. So if people do have that hype around new drops, then why can't that hype be used to raise a lot of money for an organization that needs it? Why can't it be used to support underprivileged communities? Why can't it be used to support, you know, diets or ways of life that are better for the planet? He's really used this drop culture and hypebeast culture to just kind of flip the system, the capitalist system, on its head and not make, you know, huge profits from some of these collabs, but instead, you know, really, really give back.
Yeah, sort of make it work for us. Now, it's not totally a Robin Hood situation, but it's just kind of like using the machine in a different, more effective way, I guess.
Yeah, you can rage against the machine or you can, you know, just figure out how to make the machine work for you.
Hey, replace some parts. Yeah, he also alluded to a hypothetical situation where, like, if he's selling a t-shirt, a special t-shirt, he can pop a cassette tape in there. And I think he was basically saying, you know, if there's some up and coming artists, something really, you know, special happening, we can introduce consumers, our customers, to those new aspects of culture. So it's kind of like a cultural exploration too, not just a give back to the community. It's also just like broaden the community, which I find really interesting.
Yeah. So the big thing is about growing a deeper community and building kind of a richer culture. So one of the things that many up-and-coming streetwear brands kind of seem to miss out on is the cultural context where a lot of these things are so popular or so interesting. How brands like Supreme in its early days got so hyped, how Braindead has continued to see success. And they're more interested in, you know, slapping logos on t-shirts. But Kyle's found a way to realize that the success of a brand, a streetwear brand, is really, you know, built on the success of a community and a culture and all those things that play into kind of this greater lifestyle. So if you support the culture that nurtured you, the community will continue to thrive.
Jack, I want to pick your brain about that angle in terms of sort of general products. And of course, John, I don't mean to shut you out, but how much responsibility, this is a question we ask all the time and many people ask all the time. How much responsibility does a brand have to convey a message or to give back or, you know, enrich a community versus just churning out products?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a hard question to answer universally. I think that the responsibility is growing quite a bit, though. You know, I think that the responsibility kind of ties into their consumers, right? And I think consumers are getting more demanding than ever with the values and ethics of the brand. I do think every brand has a unique responsibility.
John, do you have any sort of favorite moments from the conversation you had with Kyle that maybe didn't make it into the final edit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Kyle is such a fun guy to talk to because he's thinking about these things. He's like playing 4D chess or something like that, where he's thinking at it from so many angles, but he's not being preachy about these things. He's not necessarily being too serious about them either. He's doing what he believes in. And the product collabs he's creating are things he's all interested in. They're things that he and other people in the brand are interested in. And so he was talking about this t-shirt he did with Dev Hynes, Blood Orange.
Yep.
The BLM protests were happening last summer, and he was seeing all of this start to go on in Los Angeles where he lived. And he really felt this need to be able to take a stand and to support this, you know, some other people. And he reached out to bigger companies and they said, hey, you know, we've got a ship to sail, man. We can't just like turn around and do this. So he, you know, texted Dev and said, hey man, you want to do this? The next day they had a shirt, put it up on Instagram. And I think they did like a pre-sale or something like that. And, you know, within a week it raised $500,000. And that's more than all of these other brands with huge budgets and huge reaches. You know, Branded's still a small brand.
Right.
And so it just speaks to the fact that it's like, you know, here he is, a small brand able to raise much more to help, you know, support something that needed that support in that moment.
It's sort of like an authentic altruism. He's just doing it because he thinks that's how it should work.
Yeah. I mean, people talk about virtue signaling. People talk about kind of all that. It's kind of like buzzy words about how brands were behaving last year and this year as well. This is an example of just kind of acting how you believe you should act. There wasn't any marketing around it. It wasn't, you know, I didn't get any press releases about this. If you do the right thing, you can still have a profitable brand. And, you know, here's the thing. He did all that. He didn't go out of his way to push it in the press, to do anything else. He's doing these other great collabs. And because that happened, support for his brand has gone through the roof. And it's not
right
because of that. It's because, as Jack said, you know, the consumer right now, people who are buying products are voting with their money. And when they see a brand mm-hmm. that is also aligning with what they're doing, that's making a cool product, they see another brand that's making a cool product and isn't aligning with what they're doing, then, you know, I think the choice is pretty clear.
I know there's a lot more that we could just keep pulling the thread on. This has been, I've taken up a lot of your time already. Thank you both. Listeners, anything we did talk about, links to the magazine, if you've made it this far, probably heard an ad for the mag as well. But we're really proud of it. It's full of stories that are as rich and timely as John's, and a lot of stuff that's really serviceable and fun. But thank you all for listening today. If you are listening still and you listen to episodes a lot, we'd really appreciate you giving us a little 5-star review. Just check those 5 stars, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, boom, 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 boom. That helps more people get in on the conversation and hear more eps of the pod eps. And if you have any questions or comments, you can just email me at podcast@gearpatrol.com. So John and Jack, thanks for taking the time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Real pleasure.
Thanks everybody for listening. And until next time, take care.